I'm Dan Cassidy, and this is UBS's Top of the Morning. Today, we turn our focus back to oil markets and recap what impact a recent meeting of the minds might have on oil prices, plus some guidance on positioning within the energy sector and more. My guest today is energy analyst Nikki Decker from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So, Nikki, always great to be with you up here in the studio. Welcome back, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Dan. Great to be here.
Nikki, I know we had a pretty significant event within your space late last week, that of course being the OPEC summit. That also accounts for OPEC Plus, took place in Vienna, Austria. Can you provide our listeners, before we get into some highlights and takeaways, just a bit of context around the premise of this particular meeting and those involved as well?
Dan, so this was an ordinary meeting of the OPEC Plus consortium. OPEC typically meets twice a year in Vienna. One meeting is in the spring and the other one later in the year around this time. So what is OPEC Plus? OPEC has joined forces with other non-member oil producing nations, most notably Russia. They're the second largest oil producer in the world. And together, they comprise OPEC Plus. So, you know, the OPEC meeting or the OPEC Plus meeting is now a two-day affair. The most recent one, as you said, was on December 4th and 5th. Day one begins with a meeting of the Joint Ministerial Monitoring Committee. And we've talked about the role of this committee in the past. And it is comprised of a few ministers, but in general, all attend. The committee looks at current OPEC production levels relative to history. There is greater emphasis on compliance to the agreed cuts. And then the JMMC also assesses oil market fundamentals, expectations in order to make recommendation based on the action that they believe will be necessary in order to keep the oil markets in balance. And then they submit a recommendation. And so immediately following the JMMC meeting on day one, OPEC will hold their meeting to sort of formalize this recommendation. And then on day two, OPEC Plus will hold their broader meeting essentially to ratify the OPEC day one decisions and then a statement and a press conference typically follow each of these meetings. So that was the schedule, Dan, for this meeting. Under the discussion for this particular event was the existing production cut agreement. That agreement expires on March 31st, 2020. That's before OPEC's next ordinary meeting in June. So I would also note that, you know, the consensus of the oil markets right now is for pretty massive oversupply in the first half of 2020. So, and we're in that camp as well. So, you know, this was a significant event, one that the oil markets are watching closely.
So you mentioned that key milestone in between the meetings. And as far as the production, what does that mean for price stability? What are the implications there? And what will you be looking at as we move into the first few months of 2020?
Well, you know, Dan, prices have been pretty stable of late, and I think the markets appear to be pretty much in balance right now. But right now, demand is supported by seasonality. But as we get into early 2020, seasonal winter fuel demand wanes and demand falls. And so, you know, we're also modeling slower economic growth globally. That means lower worldwide demand from other sectors, mostly in manufacturing. The trade dispute, of course, causes some variation in our assumption on global demand from on any given day. But, you know, our models are reflecting the current CIO house view, which is for slower economic growth, and we're modeling status quo on the trade deal. No deal, no escalation of tariffs. And then on the supply side, you know, we expect some strong growth momentum from the U.S. In 2019 to spill into early 2020. We also assume that OPEC production remains unchanged. That is, they keep their current existing production cut agreement in place all year long. And with those assumptions, we calculate some million barrels a day of oversupply in the first half.
And you did mention some of those unknowns, trade being one of them. As of this morning, we're recording this podcast on Tuesday, but an outside media source reported that the U.S. and China may delay that December 15th tariff deadline. Mm-hmm. So a lot of fluidity there. But I do want to get back to some of the key highlights and takeaways from the OPEC and the OPEC Plus meetings. I know you were very visible here last week, recapping that for our advisors, but for our clients' benefits, what are some of the main highlights and takeaways you can share with us today, Nikki?
Well, you know, so the market's expectations were for an extension of the agreement, existing agreement, beyond March 31st, and or a potential reduction in quotas immediately to alleviate the oversupply we foresee in the first half. And so what happened? Well, OPEC Plus announced a 500,000 barrel a day cut in production quotas effective January 1st. They did not extend the agreement. Instead, they will hold an extraordinary meeting of OPEC Plus on March 5th and 6th to discuss, you know, what further action they want to take. So essentially, they've kicked the can down the road. Oil prices reacted positively. West Texas Intermediate was strong last week, up some 7% for the full week. You know, frankly, we're skeptical that this agreement really changes anything. Supply may decline by some, but not by not enough. And we know that this meeting was contentious. OPEC didn't even hold their press conference at the end of day one. As of 11 p.m. local time, they were still behind closed doors. So, you know, the meeting did not go particularly well. And then the day two press conference was very, very short, certainly not a celebration that we've grown accustomed to seeing these last few press conferences. So, you know, not all are on board with, the direction that OPEC is taking right now. Now, Saudi Arabia committed to a good portion of the 500,000 barrel a day cut. That's so 167,000 barrels a day would come from Saudi Arabia. And, you know, they are motivated to support the price, but they're already underproducing by some 400,000 barrels a day. So theoretically, you know, they don't need to cut to remain in compliance. And then the rest would come from the nations, you know, the cheaters, the ones that are overproducing, including Russia. Russia production, I wouldn't expect that to fall. They've, you know, kind of found a loophole, so on paper it'll fall. But, you know, it won't, because they will produce condensates, more condensates. So nothing will change from Russia. Other chronic cheaters may cut, you know, frankly, by a token amount, but we didn't sense a whole lot of willingness on their part.
Okay, so the outcome clearly did not play out as many would have hoped. And given the note that this summit ended on, and you alluded to this a bit already, Nikki, as far as next steps leading up to some of those key dates in March, but what will you be continuing to monitor post the summit, whether it be production, rhetoric, et cetera? What will you be keeping an eye on?
Well, you know, I mean, there are a lot of moving parts just within OPEC. I think one of the things that we'll focus on is Saudi Arabia. You know, they are currently underproducing by 400,000 barrels a day. They did express on the sidelines that they are willing to maintain that same level of overcompliance. So that would imply that they'll follow through on their pledge to cut 167,000 barrels a day. But again, remember, the oversupply we foresee in the first half is 1 million barrels a day. So, you know, it'll help. Will, you know, the non-complying nations fall in line? Well, you know, they've certainly been called out by the Joint Ministerial Monitoring Committee. And we heard that actually Saudi Arabia fired a warning, which, could cause some drama down the road. If these nations do not cooperate, Saudi Arabia will open the spigots, which, of course, you know, would send oil prices right back down to the recent trough levels, you know, perhaps 40s, maybe even 30s. So they also said, you know, since that they wouldn't act unilaterally, they'll work with OPEC Plus. So this will come up on the, you know, March 5th and 6th meeting in Vienna. That's going to be very interesting.
So I do want to get your thoughts as far as where CIO, specifically your colleague, Giovanni Stanova, where does he see oil prices headed, given the outcome, given the turbulence within the group, the member nations right now? What does oil look like as we end 2019 and get into the first few months of 2020, Nikki?
So Giovanni hasn't changed any of the assumptions that he has in his model right now. So we're actually just more comfortable just monitoring. And so our price views have also not changed. We don't think the oversupply issue will be fully covered by this agreement, especially given that it expires in March. We don't want to presume what happens in March. So we'll wait. We do forecast weakness in oil prices in the first half of 2020. Either way, if the current cut agreement, additional 500,000 barrels a day, is extended, we will see weakness in the first half of 2020 as global inventories will continue to rise. So we've got West Texas Intermediate. Last I looked, it was just under $59 a barrel. We see that price falling to $50 a barrel by mid-year. That'll be about the trough. And then in the second half of the year, demand, once again, starts to rise seasonally. And, the markets should start to return to a more balanced. And so that should support the price somewhat. And then we forecast $55 a barrel for West Texas Intermediate at year-end 2020.
Was Giovanni at the meeting this year?
Not this one. And and I'm happy that he wasn't, given that it was a bitter disappointment. A lot of waiting, and they didn't get a chance to ask their questions.
Well, I know Giovanni did release a report recapping the summit, crude oil, OPEC Plus pledges to cut more. That's up on UBS Online Services. So if you are a client listening in, please reach out to your financial advisor directly if you would like to obtain a copy. Also up on UBS Online Services, I know, Nikki, as of December 4th, you released your latest energy equity preference list, your update to that ongoing piece, which outlines your investment views, recommendations within the energy sector. So perhaps that's a good note for us to end on during our conversation this morning. Given what happened, coupled with the outlook for oil prices into next year, how should U.S. energy investors be positioned within the energy sector at this time?
Well, yeah, this is I'm glad you asked that. You know, I mentioned, Dan, that Russia is currently the second largest producer in the world. Guess who's first?
Wouldn't it be us, would it?
Yep. Most people say Saudi Arabia. Nope, they're third. We're first. And that
would surprise many, I think.
Well, it's just remarkable. 10 years ago, we would have laughed at that notion.
Sure.
So, U.S., number one in oil production. Who knew? Oil prices, of course, do matter to our investment strategy. They matter to all, even OPEC, as current oil price levels, and this is the source of the frustration within OPEC, they're not sufficient to, you know, balance their fiscal budgets. And so they're, you know, these nations are starved for cash. The discontent is that, you know, if they reduce their production further just to maintain this current, you know, what they deem to be a low price, that'll hurt them fiscally. So, likewise, despite the different priorities of U.S. operators, you know, our cautious view on oil prices makes for a challenging year ahead for many U.S. operators, but not all. That's where our focus is. If you're selective, we think there's some pretty compelling investment opportunities within the energy sector. We estimate in general on valuation, current valuations are reflecting sub-mid-cycle oil prices, some $47 to $52 a barrel, even below the existing price for West Texas Intermediate. So, you know, with that in mind, our investment strategy focuses on the highest quality names. So these would be operators whose financial position is strong, whose asset portfolio and operating skill set enables sort of above average returns in cash flow. These operators are, you know, by virtue of those characteristics, relatively resistant to, low or volatile oil prices. And even in the environment we foresee, you know, these operators have the ability to generate sufficient cash flow to cover capital spending that supports growth. And we prefer those companies whose managements have pledged a commitment to ongoing capital discipline. That is spending within their cash flow, assuming oil in the low 50s, and also committed to returning cash to shareholders through dividends and share buybacks, particularly when oil prices are higher. You know, historically, they've always raised their spending levels. Now they've pledged this to shareholders. So that's, that has some appeal. And I think these operators will be the ones that will become increasingly differentiated in 2020. And we would take advantage of the compelling valuation on a select basis.
Okay, well, Nikki, very informative, terrific conversation. Appreciate you dropping by the studio and keeping our listeners informed on what occurred at this OPEC meeting, what the implications are for oil prices, the milestones to keep an eye out for in 2020, and what it all means for U.S. energy investors. I'm at around a quarter of a tank, so I'll be filling up my car on the ride home tonight. So
sure.
I'll prefer like a 250, 260.
You know, take we'll your see. Time.
Absolutely. Nikki, always terrific, and appreciate all of the insight you've provided during 2019. A lot more to come in 2020. So we'll look forward to some follow-up conversations.
Yep, as do I. All the best to you and to all our listeners.
Thank you, Nikki. Appreciate that. And again, we have been joined by energy analyst Nikki Decker from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Again, I do want to highlight two publications that are relevant to Nikki and I's conversation from this morning. One being, again, Commodity Report, Crude Oil, OPEC Plus, Pledges to Cut More. That's authored by Giovanni Stanovo from the Global Chief Investment Office. And then Nikki Decker's U.S. Energy Equity Preference List Update. Again, that was authored right on December 4th. So again, both pieces up now on UBS Online Services. If you are a client of UBS, just reach out to your financial advisor. They'd be more than happy to provide you with a copy of either or both of those publications directly. Top of the morning. We'll be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.